Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adesk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, March 31st, 2014, the end of the first quarter of 2014. And on the good news, gold is still up 50% from its beginning increase in January, so not a bad showing for the first quarter for gold. And right, Al, did I wake you up, Al?
Yes. What happened is my little headset. I'm going to have to get some staples to staple my headset where it hangs on while I'm turning.
Okay. All right. But so it wasn't a bad quarter for gold, even though that we had a lot of pressure on it in the past week and a half. And certainly again today, with gold being down $9.80 at $12.86. Silver's down 3 cents today at $19.89. Platinum was up 7 at $14.23. And palladium unchanged at $778. Yellen spoke at a meeting in Chicago today, and she said that the U.S. Central Bank needs to keep interest rates extremely low. That's not like that's the real surprising news there, Miss Yellen or Mrs. Yellen, to prop up the still very shaky U.S. job markets. Al, they should just listen to the program, and we can tell them what's going on better than us, you know?
They already know.
Yeah.
They know some of what's going on, but, you know, the truth of the matter is, for what it's worth, we are off in uncharted territory.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knows what's going on in this economic system because no one has ever been in these economic circumstances before. They have a bunch of theories and arguments and analyses of what is happening or what's likely to happen, but it's still pretty much of a crapshoot because none of it's guaranteed.
This is true. We have everybody's going to be waiting for the there's a lot of economic data coming out this week, and it's going to be capped by the jobs report on Friday. So everyone is holding their breath for this on Friday. But we'll have to see exactly how it plays out. The Dow enjoyed the end to the final quarter. And again, it's going to be all window dressing today because those statements come out and you got to make that people feel giddy and happy. And I'm glad. I know we have a lot of listeners and I have many clients who, yes, they have pensions and retirement accounts and so forth that are involved in the stock market. And I am glad that they're accounts are performing for them. as long as they have taken the steps in order to protect the performance. And of course, I am talking about gold and silver, because the USDX is down today 0.09 at 80.09. That's beginning to move down slightly. And you have crude oil down 0.16, but still at 101.51. And the paper markets today, the Dow is up 134 points at 16,457. You have the NASDAQ up 43 at 41.98. The Dow was the only one that wasn't up for the first quarter of the year. Both the NASDAQ and the S&P did finish higher for the first quarter. The S&P is up 14 at 18.72. 10-year yield today is also up a little bit, 0.01, at 2.72%. And I hope today was the deadline, Al.
For what? You know what? Signing up for Obamacare?
Signing up for
Obamacare.
Oh, no. They only have, what, 8 hours left? And is it just irony that the deadline ends is on April Fool's at 12?
The evening before April Fool's. April. We'll get everybody signed up for Obamacare, and we'll have an April 1st
it's
party.
April Fool's. But they also had a new technical problem today, and it kept a lot of the last-minute users from signing up on the website. And they said because of the traffic was surging on deadline day, and Americans, we all wait till the last minute to do what they had to do. But I'm not sure if that was the problem this time, or if they just didn't have the opportunity, or they just didn't want to start paying for their health care. Why buy health care 3 weeks or 3 months prior to what you're ready to pay for? So I'm not quite sure what it is all about, but certainly in various parts of the country, a lot of the states, people have, you know, states have seen a surge of sign up for the health insurance. Montana, they saw their health insurance sign up reached a peak today for the deadline. And so we're seeing that throughout the whole country. So,
well, Obama will be talking about it tomorrow, and he'll be telling us how it was a success and so on and so forth.
Yes.
May even be talking about it this afternoon or even today. I don't know.
Well, you know, he's busy over in traveling the world. I guess his wife and daughters and mother-in-law, they're still in China. I'm not quite sure about that, but they were just recently there in China, and he's traveling the world. Just this weekend, I believe he was in Saudi Arabia enjoying the company of the king. But I had some good.
I'm not sure if he was absolutely enjoying that company or he wasn't enjoying that company. There are at least some rumors that he left in the middle of a meal with the king, and he just left, and all of a sudden he pulled out, and no one seems to know why. No one even knows whether it's a true story or a rumor, but it may be that there's more friction between the Obama administration and the Saudis than government wants to admit. Mm-hmm. And it can't be, you know, the Saudis have depended on the United States for their national security, particularly for the security of their government, since 1971-72. It's 40 years roughly they've counted on the U.S. for security. They've got to be having second thoughts, because the Ukraine had a similar treaty with the United States, where the United States guaranteed to protect the Ukraine against invasion by Russia, and it turns out that treaty hasn't worked out very well for the Ukrainians, and the Saudis have to wonder the same thing. The United States has no longer as economically powerful as it was. We are less stable economically. Our military has been diminished, not necessarily exhausted, but they've been diminished by the lengthy war in Iraq. And I have no idea what that's done to my army morale. Because in the end, why were we in Iraq? Does anyone know? Weapons of mass destruction? Is that what it was all about? There weren't any. You know, it has to wear on people, and they have to wonder. I think the United States is just at a point where, we've said this before, but they can bomb people, We can send in the drones, send in the bombers, the rest of that sort of thing. But I don't think we're going to put boots on the ground for another decade. I'm not sure, but I don't think we have the resources and the morale necessary for another invasion, legitimate invasion. And other countries in the world, I think, agree with me, or at least suspect that what I'm saying is roughly correct. And if they do, that means if you're an aggressor, the world is now opened up where you can take advantage of what may be apathy or insolvency for the United States, and you can invade someone. And if you are a weak nation, you've got to watch what you're doing, or you're liable to be invaded or otherwise exploited by the rest of the predators while the United States sits on the sidelines. So in any case, it may well be that the Saudis have realized they're going to have to start taking responsibility for their own security. And that's going to make for an interesting phenomenon, because the Saudis are spoiled. They've been so rich for so long, I'm not sure that they can find enough of their own people willing to fight.
Not when half of them, you know, get a check.
No, I understand. You
know, hey, give me a check, and I'm not so sure I'd want to fight. So,
wealthy people don't necessarily make superb warriors.
No.
You know, when you got it all and this life is good, why take a chance on losing it in a fight? And it's not to say that wealthy people don't get out there and struggle and fight and the rest. I know they do, but not the same thing, not militarily. They struggle in corporate boardrooms and in courtrooms. And, you know, within those arenas, they can be powerful, gallant, courageous, whatever. That's not the same as going after somebody who's got a gun. He's coming after you with a gun. You're going after him with a gun. It's a little different.
Mm-hmm. I think in another sector, there was, I guess the way you look at it, if you own shares of Pepsi or Coca-Cola or Dr. Pepper, perhaps you're not too happy with this report, but those who are trying to become a healthier person might appreciate this. The U.S. sales volume of carbonated soft drinks, they fell 3% in 2013. And, of course, this decline in soft drinks has actually begun about a decade ago.
Yeah.
It represents a steeper drop than 1.2% decline in 2012 and a 1% drop in 2011. But you have a lot of other drinks that are popping up, the energy drinks. I'm not so sure if they're healthier or if they're more dangerous than what a carbonated soft drink would be. But you do have the flavored waters and other items. You have the you know, your own carbonated stuff that you can make at home and so forth. But this is the ninth consecutive year of declines, and the top 10 soda brands. What's interesting, there was only one that was up out of the top 10 soda brands, and that was Sprite. It was barely up. It was 0.1, but it was up of all the top 10. It was the only one that was up.
So what do you think is replacing? What do you think is replacing the sodas?
Beer? No, I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think it's water. I think it's water. I think people are drinking this bottled water, and you see them walking around carrying their own
bottles.
Well,
they have flavored waters. I think a lot of people that were addicted to the Coke and the Pepsi and the Dr. Peppers, of course, is usually the. I think they don't give up and change to water. They go to carbonated water and flavored waters and so forth. But certainly the bottled water.
For Pepsi, it's not carbonated. That's the point.
Yeah.
I heard a story back years ago.
We have a caller too.
Oh, we do. Well, let's take the caller. I'll save my story for some time in the future. Eduardo, what you got for us, Eduardo?
Good afternoon, Alfred and Melody. Any chance you folks could get your foreign correspondent co-host Roger S. Sales back? He made an important contribution when he wasn't cut off by Al.
Well, Roger and I, you may think he made an important contribution, and maybe he did, but he and I had a falling out, and it won't happen again.
We appreciate your call, Eduardo. Thank you.
Well, on that happy note, here's a story I had on
Well, let me just
carbonated beverages.
Let me just say this real quick before you do your story. We do have Rick Volrath joining us this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the blood moon, and we're going to pick him up at our break at 20 after. So stay tuned. Okay, Al, tell us your
just story came through back. I'll bet I heard this 15 years ago. I believe it to be true. I can't verify. A man was working for the Center for Disease Control. And he was a scientist, and he studied, he would run diseases. They would see how fast a disease would propagate in particular media. For example, he'd test particular disease in a Petri dish with a series of Petri dishes, and each one of them would have a different concentration of sugar in the Petri dishes. And it's no surprise that when you had more sugar, the diseases would grow more rapidly. But what he did is he set up a series of Petri dishes that had different degrees of sugar in them, and he put them in an environment where he could control the amount of carbon dioxide that was in the air. And what he discovered is that when he increased the amount of carbon dioxide that was in the air, the diseases grew exponentially compared to what they'd done with just sugar in natural air, right, with higher levels of carbon dioxide. And the point behind this is he said, well, he was going to report this, his findings and his research to the Center on Disease Control, but the implications are that the soft drinks, they have sugar in them. Okay, you know, that's tastes good and we all like it, but it's bad for you. But the carbon dioxide also accelerates the growth of pathogens. Now, this was a report. I can't tell you it's God's truth, but I believed it was true, and I still think it is. Point being that if you're going to drink those, carbonated beverages, you're doing something your body's not designed to do. Your body is designed to take in oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide. It doesn't have any apparatus inside to clean the carbon dioxide out of your stomach or your intestines. You are creating an unnatural environment that your body was never designed to deal with. And if the report from this guy at the CDC was correct, then that is probably a bad choice. You're creating a medium inside your stomach, inside your intestines, that is more conducive to the growth of pathogens than most of us would like. Point being, it may well be that these carbonated beverages do us a certain amount of harm. And I doubt that anyone can argue that they do us much good. And therefore, you know, it's not a bad idea. It may be a good thing that the sale of the carbonated beverages is falling. And according to the story, the man who did the research at the CDC was fired. All right, they said, well, you take your research and buzz off, Sonny, because we don't need any of that here. So, true story or rumor, I'm not sure, but I think there's probably some truth to it. I think it makes a certain amount of sense. And as much as we may like Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, whatever, maybe we're better off without it. Maybe things don't go better with Coke, all right? It may be that pathogens go better with Coke, but it may be that things do not. We're going to have Rick Volrath will be on the program with us. Rick hosts a program, I believe, one day a week. Matter of fact, right after this one finishes, I believe he'll be on the air. And he talks about things from a spiritual perspective, and he will be our guest in about 3 minutes. So please stay tuned. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. easy to use, and portable in a one-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom, and programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we have Rick joining us, but before we get to Rick, I just want to tell the listeners, for those of you who are purchasing boxes of 500 Silver Eagles, we're going to run a special beginning tonight. Call me, but it's supposed to be for April 1st, $2.75 over. But they have to be boxes of 500 for the Silver Eagles, 275 over spot, and that includes your shipping cost. Extremely low price for 1 ounce Silver Eagles 2014s. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Rick Volrath, we go back, I don't know, the second election for Bush. And we used to do 11 o'clock programs at night together. He helped me when I was working 8 hours a day and then doing a live program at 11 o'clock at night. And then he started doing his own program, which airs right after this program on Mondays. You can listen to him on American Voice Radio, in the internet, satellite, and also shortwave. WBCQ 7.490. And he knows a lot, and I enjoy the way he explains many things. And we began talking about the blood moons. And I'd like to say welcome to the program, Rick.
Thank you, Melody. I'm glad to be here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. And Alfred is also here. He's joining us through, you'll be here till 10 minutes till 5 Eastern time. I don't know if you'd
Rick will be here until 10 minutes to 5 Eastern time. I'll be here.
You'll be there?
The end of it. Yes.
Yes.
Hello, Rick. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Alfred. Nice to meet you as well. And I can stay till the end of the broadcast, Melody, because I've prepared stuff so that I won't have to do anything other than just get ready for the 5 p.m. broadcast as well. So I am able, if you'd like me to stay till the end of this broadcast.
Fantastic. Start us out.
All right. Go ahead, Melody.
Start us out on blood moon.
Okay. First of all, today is the 29th day of the 13th renewal period or month based on the Almighty's method of reckoning time. every 4 or 5 years, an extra renewal period or month is added in, similar to what happens when a leap year occurs and February has 29 days as opposed to 28 days. So based on that means of reckoning time, today is the 29th day of the 13th renewal, which means that as of the first light of the night or first sliver of the new moon, which will either be this evening or tomorrow evening, we will be entering into a new year, which is going to be totally overlooked, obfuscated, and ignored by the world. They'll give attention to January 1st or Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of a new civil year, or the Chinese New Year, or the Muslim New Year. But the truth of the matter is that based upon the scripture, this evening or tomorrow evening, by default, we will enter into the beginning of a new year. And the scripture that makes that very plain is in the first chapter of the first book of the scriptures, called In the Beginning, or Genesis, as most people know it by. Chapter 1, verse 14 says, "And Yahweh said, let lights come to be in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them," and these lights are the sun, the moon, and the stars, "and let them be for signs and appointed times and for days and years." Now, having said that, let's get into the blood moon. The same day that WorldNet Daily published a major report about a rare phenomenon known as blood moons and its possible connection to an imminent return of Messiah to Earth, NASA hid its official eclipse website from public view without any explanation whatsoever. And let me stop real quickly. I didn't mention something that I should have. A renewal period, or a month as it's known, according to the scriptural way of reckoning it, is either 29 or 30 days. That's the scientific fact. The moon orbits the Earth every 29.5 days on average, meaning it's either 29 or 30. It's never 28 like February. It's never 31. So there's a difference between the Almighty's method of reckoning time and how we have been taught to reckon time by the Roman Gregorian calendar that is based on the solar sun system. Okay.
And you're saying that God's system, at least to some degree, is based on not just the sun, but on the moon.
That's correct.
And it creates a kind of complexity where it's difficult to exactly know. It's not just rigid.
No, it's not really, Alfred, because it tells us clearly that when that first light of the new moon is seen, that, in other words, you're going to have a new moon. It's going to get, it's going to wax till it gets full, then it's going to wane until it is actually a dark moon. And that is what most calendars say determines when we enter into a new month. Or, excuse me, that's not when they say that, like, we enter into a new month, but they call the dark of the moon a new moon. And there are some who reckon time that way. I believe that a new moon means new. So when that first sliver is seen, according to the scripture, that means we enter into a new renewal period or month, as it's called. So it really isn't complicated. And Muslims and different people groups do reckon time according to that lunar method of doing so.
Well, what I mean by complicated is that with the system we have, it just says we've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it's pretty much everybody knows what it's going to be. But, for example, you illustrated earlier that maybe the first of the year is going to start tonight. Maybe it's going to start tomorrow.
Correct.
And when I'm trying to get to complicated might not be the right word, but there's a little bit of mystery that remains with us. It's not quite clear when we're going to see that first sliver.
No, it's not set in stone, and that's why when people look at, quote, Jewish calendars or calendars that are reckoning or being reckoned by the first light of the moon, that they're making an assumption that it's going to be on a certain day, when the fact of the matter is that that's something that can't be completely foreknown before it happens. But let me continue. I know we're on a limited period of time right here, but I hope that made it a little bit clear. Anyway, on February 12th, WorldNet Daily published a story titled Rare Phenomenon to Shake Planet Earth. And that story focused on a cycle of four upcoming lunar eclipses, also called blood moons, because of the fact the color of the moon often appears as blood when it becomes darkened. And this is spoken about in the scriptures on numerous occasions. In the book of Acts chapter 2, beginning with verse 17, it says, "And it shall be in the last days, says the Almighty, that I shall pour out of my presence on all flesh." That's rendered spirit in most translations. "And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. And also on my male servants and on my female servants I shall pour out my presence in those days, and they shall prophesy. And I shall show wonders in the heavens above and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and splendid day of Yahweh. And it shall be that everyone who calls on the name of Yahweh shall be delivered." So there is a reference right there to the blood moon. And the thing that is most significant about this to me is that these predicted blood moons that NASA had on their website that they took down without explanation after WorldNet Daily published their report, attempting to look at a connection between the return of Messiah to Earth when those dates occurred and Yahweh's appointed times or festivals as they're known, is that they do coincide exactly this year, 2014, and next year, 2015, with the beginning of Passover and the Festival of Tabernacles or the Festival of Booths. And they're Yahweh's appointed times. They're not Jewish holidays. They're not Jewish holy days, as we've been led to believe when we read the crawl at the bottom of Fair and Balanced Fox or different news stations. They haven't been done away with. They're eternal. He makes it very clear that Passover or Pesach is a memorial, a remembrance day for his people to observe unto all generations. And the emissary Shaul, whose name was never changed to Paul, also has a second witness concerning this in the Messianic Scriptures, or the New Testament, as it's called, in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 5, beginning with verse 6. And he says, "Your boasting is not good." He's talking to them because a man was having sexual relations with his father's wife, and they were part of the assembly, and they weren't even repenting of it. "Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the entire lump?" Well, leaven in the scriptures is symbolic of transgression or sin against Yahweh's commands. "Therefore, cleanse out the old leaven so that you are a new lump as you are unleavened. For also Messiah, our Passover, was offered for us. So then let us observe the festival, Passover, unleavened bread, and not with old leaven, not with the leaven of evil and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." And this blood moon, two of them occurring this year and next year as well, on the first and the last of Yahweh's appointed times, goes way beyond any type of a coincidence whatsoever. And I also find it more than coincidental that NASA would choose to remove their website on the same day that WorldNet Daily came up with their video about the blood moons and the connection to the return of Messiah to Earth.
I've read that there have been seven back-to-back blood red moons that have fallen on the first day of Passover, and this is the eighth.
That's correct.
So what makes this different?
What makes this different is that, well, let me just go back a little bit here. First of all, Yahweh tells us to number our days. We've done the opposite. We've called them after the names of idols: Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Frigga's Day, Saturn's Day, Sun's Day, etc. So when we number our days, we can see that it's not the way that the world does it, but like you said, there have been seven of these blood moons previously, and this is the eighth time. What makes this significant to me is that the number eight in the scriptures is significant of a new beginning or a new start. There's 7 days in a week. The seventh day is called the Sabbath day. Messiah rose on the first day of a new week, the eighth day. Wasn't called Sunday then, and it's an erroneous assumption to think that he died on a Friday and rose on a Sunday, because we're not supposed to call him after the names of idols. But at any rate, this is a new beginning, because it is the eighth time that it has occurred, or it will be the eighth time that it has occurred. Noah was the eighth person who stepped out onto a new earth to commence a new order of things after Yahweh sent the flood to destroy everyone. There were eight people altogether who passed through to the new or regenerated world: him, his wife, his three sons, and his three sons' wives. Circumcision was to be performed on the eighth day for a male child, because it was a foreshadowing of the true circumcision of the heart, which is to be made without hands, talking about the putting off of the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Messiah. And that circumcision today is when we are immersed in his name, in a beautiful picture of his death, burial, and resurrection. Messiah was impaled on the stake to forgive us of our transgressions through his blood that he shed. We die to our old way of life with him. He was buried in the tomb. We're buried in the watery grave of immersion. After 3 days and three nights, he rose, never to die again, and we rise out of the watery grave of immersion, a renewed creature in him. If anyone is in Messiah, he is a new creation. The old things have passed away. Behold, new things have come. So this isn't the first time, Melody, like you were alluding to, that this has occurred, but it is extremely significant in that it is the eighth time that it's going to be occurring.
But we don't know what it actually signifies at this point in time. Some people, I suggest that it's going to mean Jerusalem is going to be fully returned to Israel. Other people think it means the Messiah is returning. We understand that these blood moons, according to the Bible, signify that something important is about to happen. But do we have prophecy that we can rely on, where we sit back and say, oh, we know what it is?
There are different aspects of it, like you just said, Alfred. There's not something that I know of that clearly indicates what this actually points to, but what I do feel strongly about is the fact that there are exactly 6 months between the beginning of the festival of Passover / unleavened bread and the beginning of the festival of tabernacles or the festival of booths. So if the tribulation period were to begin during the festival of Passover, which it very well may do, because Yahshua fulfilled all of the spring festivals through his death, burial, and resurrection. Yahshua, our Passover lamb, was offered for us on Passover, just as the children of Israel slaughtered their Passover lamb on that particular evening. And
well, let's hold at that point, Rick, because we have to break to say take some commercials, and we will return to Passover in a moment. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom and our guest Rick Volrath, and we will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with my co-host, Melody Cedarstrom, and our guest, Rick Volreith. And Rick is talking about blood moons. There are going to be four of them in the next, two of them in the balance of this year, and two more next year. And if I understand correctly, a series of four, if it's not unprecedented, it's nearly unprecedented. And Rick can correct me or inform me on what the truth of the matter is there. Rick was talking about, we were touching on Passover when we closed, and we can go back to Passover right now. And beyond that, I'd like to see, what do we think the significance of these blood moons are now? What do people need to know? What is this likely to signal?
This is likely to signal, well, before I say that, Alfred, I'd like to go back to what you just commented on earlier and what Melody brought up even earlier in the broadcast, and that is there have been seven back-to-back blood red moons that have fallen on the first day of Passover and the first day of the Festival of Tabernacles or Booths previously.
In what period of time are we talking about?
Let's see here. It says there's been seven since 1 A.D. Three of these were connected to, first of all, 1492, the year that the Yehudim, or the Jews, were expelled from Spain by Queen Isabella. 1948, statehood for Israel and the War of Independence. 1967, the Six-Day War. In other words, all of those very, very significant days in the history of the people of Israel. I don't know what the other four were, but it's happened seven times since AD 1. This will be the eighth time. And again, I see the new beginning, the eighth day. Sabbath day is the seventh day. So the next day is the eighth day. It's a new week. And as the scripture says, a day with Yahweh is as a thousand years, and a thousand years is as a day. So I see extreme scriptural significance in a new beginning, perhaps the end of this particular age and his return. And one of the reasons I feel strongly about that is that there are six renewal periods or months exactly between the festival of Passover and the festival of Booths or the festival of Tabernacles. Once again, these are the Almighty's appointed times. They're not Jewish holidays or Jewish holy days. They have not been done away with. They are eternal. And based upon the fact that there are exactly six renewal periods or months between Passover and the Festival of Booths, keeping in mind that the tribulation period spoken about in the scriptures is 3.5 years, to me it seems very, very likely that this blood moon that we're on the verge of having occur here in 14 more days could be the beginning, maybe this year, perhaps next year, perhaps neither one of these 2 years, perhaps some point in the future, ushering in that 3.5 year tribulation period of time. That's the significance that I see in the timing that is occurring at this particular point in time.
Now, when we talk about the tribulation starting, we're talking about something of global significance. But if I understand correctly, in the past, the blood moons have mainly been significant to just Israel. Is that true? Am I understanding correctly?
Yes. I'm not aware of any significant event that mm-hmm. transpired, although I'm sure that there were in the other four besides the three that I mentioned, 1492, 1948, and 1967. But there always have been significant world events taking place when these blood moons coincided with the beginning of the Festival of Passover and the beginning of the Festival of Booths. And one thing that's significant about the Festival of Booths that most people aren't aware of, that's been hidden in plain sight, is the fact that that is the point in time when the Almighty actually manifested himself in the flesh to mankind. In the book of Yohanan, John chapter 1, verse 14, it says, "And the Word became flesh and tabernacled," or pitched his tent, as some translations say, "among us," which is a clear indication that it was during the Festival of Tabernacles or the Festival of Booths that he did manifest himself in the flesh to man. And of course, Christianity says that, you know, Jesus was born on Christmas, which is a counterfeit of when he actually did manifest himself in the flesh to man. And what's more significant to me, or just as significant to me, about the Festival of Booths and it being the last of Yahweh's appointed times, Passover being the first of Yahweh's appointed times, is contained in the very last book of the scriptures, the book of the revealing, or the book of Revelation, chapter 21, beginning with verse 1. "And I saw a renewed heaven and a renewed earth, for the former heaven and the former earth had passed away, and the sea is no more. And I, Yohanan, saw the set-apart city, renewed Yerushalayim." It's not talking about Jerusalem and Israel. "Coming down out of the heaven from the Almighty, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the heaven saying, see, the booth of the Almighty is with men, and he shall dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and Yahweh himself shall be with them and be their Almighty. And Yahweh shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor mourning, nor crying, and there shall be no more pain, for the former matters have passed away. And he who was sitting on the throne said, see, I make all matters new. And he said to me, write, for these words are true and trustworthy. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Aleph and the Tau, or the Alpha and the Omega, as it's rendered, the beginning and the end." So it is marking an end point in the scripture when the booth, the tabernacle of the Almighty, will dwell with men, and his people will be dwelling with him. And it's very significant because Passover is the beginning, if you will, the first of his appointed times, and Festival of Booths is the end, or the last of his appointed times. They're exactly 6 months apart, and to me it seems highly likely that the blood moon could be indicative of the ushering in of that 3.5 year tribulation period of time.
Well, We're talking about two blood moons in 2014, one on April 15th, and another one, I believe, is October 8th. Is that right?
Yes, I believe that's the correct date.
And we've got two more in 2015, one on the 4th of April and another one on the 28th of September. Now, do we have to wait? Will there be significant events with the, or do you anticipate that there will be significant events with the first two blood moons, the first one, the first two, and this year? Or do we have to, or is it expected that we're going to go through all four of these blood moons, and two in this year, two in next year, before something significant begins to happen?
Well, in light of the history that has occurred on dates in the past when these blood moons have occurred, I would expect something very significant to occur this year and next year as well.
Okay. That makes it interesting, of course. How many people are, do you suppose, in the Christian community are aware of the blood moons at this time?
I think a small percentage probably are. I don't think it's a very large percentage. I know that some Christian pastors and teachers have realized the hidden manna and the beautiful heritage that we do have through Yahweh and his people, the children of Yisrael. And the definition in the scripture, by the way, of who Yisrael is, doesn't have anything to do with being able to trace your earthly ancestry in the flesh back to Abraham or the 12 tribes, or whether or not you're a Jew or live in the nation of Israel. It makes it very, very plain that the chosen people, the children of Yisrael, are those who are obeying the commandments of the Almighty and who possess the witness, the testimony of Yahshua the Messiah, those who are not ashamed to proclaim him before men, even though we dwell in a nation that mocks, makes light of, and belittles calling upon Yahweh's name in the name of Yahshua. So that's the scriptural definition of who Yisrael is. It doesn't have anything to do with the flesh. It says in the book of the Revelation that those with the Lamb, those with Yahshua, our Passover Lamb, are called and chosen and trustworthy. So don't call yourself Gentiles, ladies and gentlemen, if you put your trust in Yahweh and call upon his name and obey his commands, because all Yisrael is going to be delivered or redeemed, as the scripture says. You've got to be grafted into Israel through belief and trust in Yahweh and through guarding his commands. They haven't been done away with any more than his appointed times have been done away with. Grace is a big fat lie. Just believe in Jesus and say some magic words and ask him to come into your heart and you'll go to heaven when you die. That is completely unscriptural. Grace is an example of what the scripture calls the broad way. Broad is the way and wide is the gate that leads to destruction, and many there be that enter therein. It's an example of man coming up with his own idea on how to get to heaven, and it just doesn't pan out. It's not true. The names
you're saying
written,
grace is essentially a matter of perhaps it's perceived to be a matter of good intentions. All right? People are sitting back. If I'm understanding you correctly, you say, oh, I have the grace of the Messiah. And in that grace, I'm sure to be saved. It kind of translates to me, at least, as a matter of reflection of the fact man has pretty good intentions, so he's okay. What you're saying is, no, it's more the road to salvation is far more narrow. And it relies on more than mere grace. Are you alleging that it relies on works, or what do you think makes the determination for the narrow way?
Well, the determination that causes the way to be narrow is by mankind seeking to establish their own forms of righteousness and not obeying the commands of the Almighty. In the book of Ecclesiastes, it says, let us hear the conclusion of the entire matter. Fear the Almighty and guard his commands, for this applies to all mankind. Now, that would mean Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, and everyone. I'm not saying that we can earn our way into Yahweh's eternal realm by the things that we do down here. Absolutely not. By his stripes we're healed. He shed his blood on the stake to redeem us, deliver us, cleanse us, and forgive us of our transgressions. And knowing that, we should have a righteous desire to fear him and guard his word. In the very last book of the scriptures, it says, righteous are those doing his commands, so that the authority shall be theirs under the tree of life and to enter through the gates into the city. If you don't love him, if you don't fear him, you're not going to be guarding his commands, but you will believe in traditions and doctrines and dogmas of men, like just believe in an individual and you'll be saved when you die.
One of the problems that we have, I struggle with the Christian faith. And when I say struggle, I mean I struggle to understand what it really means. And one of the questions that comes up is, while God, or Yahweh, in the Old Testament, gives us 10 commandments and several hundred additional commands in the text, the Messiah gives us 2 commands. If I understand correctly, in the New Testament, love the Lord and love thy neighbor as thyself. Which commands do you think we are obligated to obey? And we've got probably a minute and a half before we have to close down.
I understand. Well, he said those are the 2 greatest commands. You know, love Yahweh your Almighty with all your mind, your heart, your inner being, and your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. He did say that. That's what they all hinge upon. All the other ones do. That's not to say, though, that the other 8 or other ones have been done away with. That would be like saying, well, we can commit adultery now, we can steal now, we can murder now, we can do all those other things that he said not to do, because all we have to do is, well, if you do love the Almighty with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor yourself, you're going to obey the rest of Yahweh's commands as well.
I agree. I think that's probably correct. But it's certainly, it's one of those things, it's like a lot of things in the Bible. You look at them, and it's kind of subjective at times, your decision on what it means. And it's hard, you know, a lot of sincere people come to a number of different conclusions about what it means, and it's hard to know sometimes. You almost need a divine revelation to actually understand the meanings. Rick, we're going to have to break. Why don't you give folks a little contact information, tell them about your show starting in, 2.5 minutes?
Right. That's something that Melody has graciously provided the platform for about 9 years now. It's coming up on 7.490 at 5 p.m., sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, just as this one is. And our website is theremnantministry.com. That's theremnantministry.com. And you made a good point there, Alfred. I just wanted to quickly say that the scripture makes it plain that if we do seek Yahweh with all of our heart and call upon him, he will reveal himself to us. So I encourage the listeners to ask him what his name is, to ask him to reveal himself to them, and according to his word, he will do so.
All right, Rick, thanks very much. Rick Ballroth will be on in just another, if you're on American Voice Radio, he will be right back with you. Melody and I are gone for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. May the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Rick Ballroth.
Bye-bye.
There never seems to be a single penny left for me.